Hello, Edward. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Summertime podcasting is always hard. Everybody's all over the place, but we finally managed to get some time and do a podcast today. So today, we discussed it previously as well, but obviously the viewers and listeners don't know. But we wanted to talk a bit about identity management and more specific about single sign-on, especially with recent developments within the company and stuff like that. We come in contact with a lot of those tools, and we wanted to have a little chat about it so people can use it as a guide to choose technologies, but also get some more understanding about how the technology work and what it actually tries to achieve, and in most cases also actually achieves. So maybe you can dive right into the why. Why should we use an identity management or single sign-on?
It kind of all starts once you need to start onboarding employees. So if it's just one person company, then you probably don't need that much of the capabilities that a single sign-on gives you. But then once you are working in a technology role, and then let's say you are in a startup, and then your first employees start joining, then you see that it can be quite difficult to give everyone access to all the different systems. Things can go wrong. Where are the SSH keys? Where is this? Where is that? That you need to give the new employee, and then before you know it, it takes a week to give someone access to all the systems.
It becomes a paper like create Google accounts, create GitHub accounts,
Checklist.
log in, create AWS users,
Add to
and so
that
on and so
group.
on and so on. Yeah, exactly. And
Yeah, just create and then add to that group permissions. So
yep.
there's a lot
Exactly.
of work involved.
I like
But
for
that's
one
actually quite
person.
easy, right? Quite easy because once an employee leaves,
Where did he
oh.
everywhere where was his access or his or hers
Exactly.
access? Where
What
did
passwords do I need to change? Oh, he has the MySQL password. Oh, wait, but if I change it, it's in the application. I cannot just change it.
Exactly. The SSH key. This hasn't been rotated for over 10 years since then. So many people left the companies. So there's definitely a use case for it. Even from how many people would you say that it would become interesting? I would say from, I think, three, four people or something like that. It already becomes quite interesting to actually switch to a solution like that. And also the benefit, but we're going to go into that later on. The cost, it's like most of the things that we use are SaaS products. So it's just pay on demand. So for four users, it's relatively cheap. For 10 users, it's more, but it's not that it's the initial stepping stone is not that big, like it used to be when you had to create those systems yourself and manage them yourself and build all the things around them. But
Yeah, I think
and
SaaS indeed changed kind of when you should be implementing it. Because I remember
yeah.
like a long time ago, you would just not implement it because it's a lot of work. But now, like you say, the stepping stone is very, very low because you could be a small company and say, okay, I will have employees, I will have a second and third person, so I'm just going to set it up right now and only pay for maybe one license.
Yep,
I mean, I'm sure
exactly.
they're not going to sell you one license at like you like just like I think it often starts on five licenses or something. So but
True.
for example, Google, well, there's often identity management hidden in some of the other packages. You can just start with social login as well, GitHub as well. Often you can log into places with GitHub or with Google, or Google also supports SAML. That's even how we did it in the beginning, a very, very long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we used the SaaS products, you could just use. It's more difficult to set up, but if you just need a system and you don't want to work with passwords, then it's a good way to like was it the official name of Gmail for Business, G Suite, I guess. You can
Exactly.
use G Suite, SAML, or you can add apps, something
But
like
it's
that.
like,
If you
but it's
just
like you
want
said also,
something
like
very
it's
simple.
a hidden fee, not hidden feature, but it's like it's not that convenient to actually use
It's
it
not
in
convenient,
comparison to the other
no.
tools. You have
Yes,
to do a lot
yes.
of things yourself, But like, it comes at a benefit that you already paid for G Suite and you can use it. And like, hence, it's obvious that it's not like it's not their main product. So you can use it for that, but it's not their main product. So obviously, social login is super simple.
Social login. That's kind of the first start. I just connect everything with social login. Try to reduce your passwords. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean like that's the SAML login with G Suite and stuff like that. It's it's not that user friendly in comparison to other tools.
No, definitely not user friendly.
No, because in the past we used some traditional tools as well, like Keycloak, Active Directory, stuff like that, which serve with purpose as well. Yeah, true. That's
I think a long time ago. When I went to school, they were using Shibboleth, I think. School, like institutes that had a lot of students but didn't want to spend all the money would use some open source products to first do like to first have the infrastructure to federate users because otherwise it would just be too difficult to manage. I even remember like back in the day you would set up an LDAP and then add like some kind of layer on top of that to like Shibboleth or something else to do logins. I think what kind of changed it in the industry is once we kind of started to have like you used to have Active Directory and you would log into a desktop and then Active Directory could actually give you access to certain websites or you know applications. Using the token that you already had by logging in with Active Directory, and then you had SAML and OpenID Connect, and all the social login is based on OpenID Connect. So, just having that these systems and the system that you use using a web browser actually made things a lot easier, I would say, because now everyone just logs into any platform using a web browser. Even when an open application, you open an application and you need to do authentication, it will redirect you to a website, right? So that's kind of what single sign-on is now. Single sign-on is like this login portal website where everything goes through that is then managed by a SaaS provider. Often, like when you talk about SaaS providers, it's more like Okta or OneLogin, OneIdentity it is now. So we started to use these products like OneLogin like a very long time ago. Like more than 10 years ago, we started using those, right?
Absolutely.
For identity management.
It was a relief.
Yeah, because once you're like, okay, I need to offboard a user. And then you start with, let's say, a VPN, and they need to build revocation list. And then like, this cannot be, it needs to be managed somewhere centrally, right? Yeah.
And then you get an audit because the company has grown, for example. And then it's like, did you offboard this user? And then you're scrolling through things and then you see, we didn't offboard him in this technology and the account is still active on this. Most of the times, the most important things were already disconnected, but it happened that some users kept lingering around. And not per se that the user would have bad intent, but how did the user go about his passwords and stuff like that? Did it managed it correctly and stuff like that. So it posed a lot of risk. So that was such an ease of mind that you could just say to the auditor, like when you're doing the ISO 27001 or SAS 70 or whatever it was called back in the day, you could just show, we use this tool and here. And here's a list of the accesses that the user used to have, and now they didn't use it anymore. So that was kind of a relief for me when I came into contact with OneLogin. I think it was that was my first SaaS identity solution.
Yeah, because the risk here is not really that the user would log in. The risk here is that the user reused his password somewhere else.
Yep.
LinkedIn, Adobe, wherever. Then those big players get hacked. The passwords are exposed. And then a malicious user or a hacker tries to use a combination of a login and password in enterprise of
multiple
systems,
then
gets access. Which is how data breaches happen, right? If you look back at the last 10 years, how data breaches happened at companies that we know, it is often indeed a password that has been leaked, a user that wasn't offboarded, or a user that it was not in the SSO system, that was not managed properly, still had a login somewhere. It's very also very difficult if you don't use a single sign-on system and then later you have to migrate. You have to check whether every technology that you use still doesn't have somehow the old password, because then you can say, okay, this user logged in using SSO, but then still you can still log in using the old password. Like, this was an issue as well with Skype and Microsoft as well, at some point where they linked them both, and then somehow you could still log in with the old password. I also found it out like at some point, absolutely. You could still use this old password. That shouldn't be.
And also, one major benefit that I think is super good as well is like the security policies that you can put in place across all your technologies, like change password every 30 days, stuff like that, to kind of mitigate that risk as well. But it kind of forces, like, on one holistic view of all the technologies that you use, to use the same security policies, whatever they may be, 2FA and stuff like that. While if you look at them individually, it's like GitHub wants to change every 90 days and Gmail is like 30 days, and there's no consistency in between all those technologies. Yeah. And then you get, especially like, even if you have a password expiry policy and the user is offboarded, but sometimes it can be 30 day, 90 day, whatever that you set in when you set up the account, and it's not managed centrally. So that's something I found really useful as well, that you can like put it into one place, like one source of truth. That's the source, whatever it may be, HR systems or OneLogin itself, G Suite, Office 365, whatever, like that you have one source of truth. These are my users. And then the access is being delegated across the tools. Also, a very important thing, I think, is like the segregation of duties. Like, not all developers need to have access to the main cloud accounts, whatever it may be, AWS or Google or whatever, the production account. Maybe they just need access to development account. There's an emergency, you can give temporary access. It's not like creating an additional user and then you forget to remove the user. And then obviously if the person stays long enough within the company, that's something you see as well, is like they become kind of a god mode, like because they had so many incidents and stuff like that, they gained access to everything. So like there's no, there's a name for it. It's like
recertification and...
The flow of the identity, has identity management itself.
Life cycle.
The user life cycle. They switch teams, they still have their permissions from the last thing, stuff like that. So those are obviously things that can be mitigated with a tool
like this.
Yeah,
it's a selling point.
Yeah.
And the tools use it as a selling point as well, exactly what you're saying. Yeah. But I think the what is the reason actually that we are going to these SaaS products, right? And that is just because... The actual tools, like we just mentioned, Keycloak, Shibboleth, Active Directory, like if you have to manage them, it's just so complex to manage. And that's why it became easier using those SaaS tools like OneLogin, Okta, and even others. Because when you have to manage them and when you have to learn about these protocols, it's actually quite complex. I mean, when you would look at the flow itself, it doesn't really look complex, but then there's so many exceptions and this provider does it like that and this provider does it like that and this, and then like there's layers and layers of complexity. And then the tools, some of these tools like Keycloak, they are already around for quite a long time. I think it was Red Hat that came out with it, a team in Red Hat. So
back Keycloak, in the day.
Well, now Red Hat, now it's IBM. Keycloak was released 2014, I checked earlier. Shibboleth was released in 2003, so these are quite old tools.
2014 only? I thought it was much older.
I think that's why it's section on the
Wikipedia page. Like, Wikipedia is most of the time correct. It felt older, but like, doesn't matter.
Yeah, because the interface is maybe a bit older. I don't know. But ADFS, like what you need, Federation of Active Directory, is also already around from 2003. SAML is also pretty old. So some of these technologies are really old, actually. And you can see that SAML is so much more difficult to implement than ORDC, OpenID Connect, and stuff like that, just because these technologies are older. Mm-hmm. But you have actually, and I want to mention some open source tools there, but the open source tools are often open source because there's like a big enterprise or like a small startup behind it trying to sell the actual product. So you can still use their product for free, but it's not always obvious. So I checked, like obviously Keycloak is an open source product. But then I also have one that's called Authentic that I saw people using. It's just some company, but they also, it's also open source, so you could just kind of roll your own. One that I saw, Ori, I don't know if I pronounced it correctly, O-R-Y. One of the newer ones, I think. But then also, like when I was, when I was making my courses, Kubernetes, Golang courses, then I also want to explain single sign-on flow with, for example, Kubernetes, right?
Yeah.
Because when you use, for example, Kubernetes on AWS, it has IAM integrated. But let's say you run this on-prem and you want to integrate single sign-on in Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. Then you also have to link this, and it's like the whole implementation is not nice. So I try to use like simple tools to test everything out. And actually, CoreOS made an identity provider. It's called Dex. And I always like, when I look at open source tooling, CoreOS develops so many nice tools, like they kind of fill all these gaps.
Such
a pity that they were bought by Red Hat and Red Hat was bought by IBM. But okay, these projects, they kind of renamed them and they still exist. And I like Dex, for example, they still get updates, so it's still kind of live.
Yeah.
But it's a pity that like CoreOS in itself that made such nice products that they just had it going so well, you know, that kind of they stopped developing new stuff because like and everything else is they were also big fans of Go, so everything is written in Go and everything works very well. And Dex is another one. So if you want to roll your own identity provider, you can definitely have a look at Dex. Although I don't think it's going to be developed more, but it kind of plugs in with other systems. So I used it in one of my courses. It was very nice to use. You kind of just spin it up, have a backend database, then you have an identity provider, and then you can like plug in things like OpenID or XAML. And they also work with other providers.
Yep.
But yeah, okay. One thing I maybe want to say about these technologies, these authentication technologies, is that you often then, for example, with Dex, right? You often then see a list of supported platforms. So even though these technologies are kind of standards, still, and that's the whole complexity, I think, still they make a list of, if you want to authenticate to Slack, it will work. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But if you want to authenticate to another software product, maybe Atlassian, maybe not completely.
Possibly.
You know? You see, that's what I find crazy. It's just open protocol, but the protocols are sometimes so complex, especially in with XAML, that they may need to make a list, you know, because not everyone supports the protocol in the same way.
True.
And that's kind of a pity. But I think with OpenID is definitely much better. OpenID is much easier than XAML. XAML works with X509 certificates, a little bit like OpenVPN versus WireGuard, you know, OpenVPN, the certificates, you know, X509, super complex. Whereas, OpenID, they use tokens, JLLT tokens. Much easier way of authenticating, I find. Much more kind of modern. And you see all that's also what is adopted. Yeah, yeah, majority exactly. of products now is our OpenID. When I was doing the research for this pod, I was like, yeah, well, how did we do it in the past, right? How did we do it in the past, like around 2000s, you know, 2000 and 2003? And I was like, yeah, people would use some JavaScript with a login button, and then you would do like show source, and you could see the password
exactly.
in the front end. I found it so funny. And then like, this was even like companies did it. I mean, that was a company that accidentally did that or something like.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional, but
but this is like this is where it came from, you know.
Yeah, definitely. It's luckily those times are long.
Yeah, that's
gone,
why that's hopefully. Why these yeah, but that's why these SaaS products kind of became so important in making sure that no company will implement their own authentication mechanism and kind of completely mess it up because they don't understand the protocols.
No, for sure.
And then use a SaaS product to make sure that they also cannot have like stupidly simple passwords, because you know that in the UK that was a system hacked because of the login and password combination of TomTom or something, or like something completely obvious. Yeah. You see, you just don't want to have these things. These products can protect you against this password expiration, automatically suspension of accounts, whatever's.
Brute force attempts, all those, all that stuff.
Brute force attempts, yeah. There's a lot of stuff you have to think about when you want to write your own authentication algorithm, not certainly algorithm, like just platform, which I actually, again, talk about my courses. So my Golang course actually explains how to make an identity provider in code, in Go. But it's just like, it's not really to use in production. It's just like a learning experience. Like, how does it actually work? Yep. And once you see how it works, it's actually not very difficult. But still, there can be obvious mistakes made, like not making it secure enough so that it can be bypassed, and that's what you don't want. And that's why these products are so interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Because the cool thing about those authentication technologies is like when you use them, like when you're actually trying to implement them, you get to think about how they actually work, and it's not like just a big black box that all of a sudden you're authenticated. And that's like OpenID Connect and stuff. Like it's pretty cool how it works. So it's always nice to see. And then also like authentication is one thing, but obviously like authentication, you also have the provisioning capacity of like you have your source of truth, you have your can be your identity access management tool, but then you have to have accounts on all those subsystems where you want to authenticate to, because that like authentication and it's not always the same thing as provisioning as well. So that's also interesting that they developed scheme.
Often when you log in, let's say to Slack, it was to say, oh, I don't know you, but because you're logging through social login or to using your identity provider, I'm going to allow this login. I'm going to create you with a login.
Yeah.
And indeed, there's also there's standards to help you provision these systems. But it's not only actually about provisioning, because you could say, okay, provisioning just happens because of the authentication mechanism, so I don't need provisioning. The interesting part about using Scheme for provisioning is what happens when you offboard a user, right? Because let's say your user logs into Slack.
Oh, yeah.
How does Slack know that this user doesn't exist in your source system anymore? Well, it can pull the source system and see, okay, is this token not expired? I'm going to renew this token. But this polling is not instant, right? So this person could be fired and he might still have access to the system that he's logged in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with protocols like Scheme, which stands for System for Cross Domain Identity Management. I just have to read it.
I saw.
I can't remember these things. you just want to like the cross identity management is just like, okay, users offboarded, and then you push all the changes to all the systems. So that instantly this person doesn't have access, because it's also an issue that you come across if you want to offboard. And also during onboarding, you don't want to take a week. It's often not a week, but you know, back when in the day when we would start, and but it's probably still the same, you know, you start at an enterprise. And
but today you have access to these systems. Getting used to it, exactly.
And then, tomorrow, this nightly batch will run and you'll get access to these systems.
You know? The famous nightly batch. Bank. Yeah, exactly.
The nightly batch, in a bank, if you work in a bank or something, yeah. And this, if you use something like Scheme, you have your source of truth, one login, Okta, whatever. You use this edit, it pushes it out to all. And this is the lifecycle management you were also talking about. Pushes it out, someone presses suspend, immediately no access, someone unsuspends, someone immediately access again, someone deletes, user is gone. So that's also something that you want in combination with SAML or OpenID, that you also do the provisioning.
Yeah, because
also something that people forget.
Absolutely. Because that's also interesting that you mentioned that, because like if you suspend the user, he's unable to authenticate, but let's say he has in the product, let's say Slack, he has an API key, but he's not like suspended through Scheme, like he's just unable to get to Slack using authentication. But if you suspend a user and Slack doesn't know that the user is suspended, it will not be able to authenticate to Slack anymore because like the identity solution like shields it. But if he has an API key programmed somewhere, like it's like the single sign-on solution is not between there anymore, so they could still use that API key.
It depends on the implementation in the
absolutely.
But check every call whether your API key is still valid. It shouldn't work. But
true.
Obviously, that's not what happens, right?
No.
It just kind of assumes okay, you are logged
that's
in.
That's an ideal situation
or whatever. Yeah, because there's a lot of latency as well. You cannot go back to the identity provider and ask constantly, like, is this user still logged in? Is this user still logged in? It doesn't work, right? So you need to have got some kind of push mechanism as well. To make sure that everything is kind of synced so adding these layers and these complexities left and right, you can see it quickly gets more complex, right? And that's also
absolutely
a reason why companies don't really want to manage and the system itself as well, and that's why they go with these SaaS products. Yeah, one downside I find, and then we can talk a bit about the cost of it. One downside is that they also try to upsell you all the time, right? So you use OneLogin or Okta. And you say, I want to use Skim, for example. Ah, well, it's not included in your license. I think with Okta, right? We had this with a customer very recently.
Yeah.
He wanted to use Skim, and then, I need to change my license. And that's always like, that's they also have this website, right? That I found,
yeah,
the SSO.tex.
Exactly. I love that.
SSO.tex, you have to type SSO.tex in Google or in a search engine, and you will see what I'm talking about. Is this not so obvious to open another software account somewhere and get SSO support? And that's crazy because the API calls are just like, it is purely from a business perspective. It costs like nothing for these companies.
No, exactly.
Purely from a business perspective, it's like, you want extra security? You're going to pay for it. And the price is often like a big difference, right? It's like crazy price.
It was crazy.
Now you're an enterprise.
Cloudflare, like they also have a column with like the percentage of increase that you're from base subscription to a subscription with SSO. Like according to this site, in 2023, to have SSO on Cloudflare, it was an upmark of 4,900%. Like the base account is 20 per user, and then it goes up to 1,000 per user if you want to use SSO.
Yeah.
Like, like what? Obviously, they're like, that was the Coursera, same thing, from 399 per user per year to 94,000 per year if you want SSO. But obviously, like it's not all like there's something gray in between because obviously this is for the number of licenses is different, but it's like in a set of licenses according to the base user or to the SSO. But it's crazy why they would charge you for that, because it's also like, let's say you have a platform and it gets misused, you also get bad publicity, right? Like if it gets hacked because of the user didn't change his password or whatever. I don't know why they do it, but
it's
obviously...
It's mainly because they know you are an enterprise.
Yeah,
you need
exactly.
to be regulated.
Yeah.
There's some sort of like ISO certified, SOC 2, whatever. So you're going to pay for it. And then the trick that they actually do is for the smaller companies, so that they don't completely complain about it, is social login. So if you're a smaller company, you can then use social login in all these platforms for free often. Like same with Slack, right? We are not paying some crazy Slack subscription. We still have our identity provider, but use social login for Slack.
Exactly.
That's kind of the way. See, if you're a small company, you don't want to like overpay all these third party products, and you just use social login. I think that's a good alternative. And then social login can be just your Gmail account or Office 365 account or whatever. And then which you can also deprovision once you
need
to offboard a user, your list just becomes a little bit longer. You say, okay, I use OneLogin, I deprovision in OneLogin and I deprovision in Gmail. Or OneLogin says this user is suspended, so it pushes it to Gmail. That also works.
Yeah. But it also becomes an important technology that I think it's obviously a good choice to use a SaaS product, because it's like the core thing of all your tools are interconnected to it. It's your if you, for example, lose access to it or If you self-host it and the EC2 instance goes down or whatever, like it's become such a hassle to get everything back up and running, and it's that you better leave it to the professional companies, I would think, who are used to maintaining stuff like this. So that's obviously a huge benefit of the SaaS.
And what we do is we help our customers, the people that want to integrate identity solutions. We help them using all these tools and the providers, the identity providers.
And for sure.
That's why we have been using OneLogin, for example, already for more than 10 years. Some of our customers use Okta, but our preference is mainly OneLogin, especially for smaller companies.
Also
depends on the use case, but you know, most smart companies use OneLogin.
There was something I wanted to mention as well. Like the thing that we also do is customizations on those solutions as well. Which is quite important, because obviously they cover a wild range of services, but obviously sometimes services are not there or need some special handling or whatever. Like that's also something we come across with quite often too.
Exactly, connectors and custom code and but it actually got a lot easier, because I remember we would do some customizations on with radios and VPN, and but now I mean it gets a bit better. We don't we have better solutions now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, obviously, no.
So I think that's it. That's it.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it was a good call. I hope everybody enjoyed it. If something comes up or you have any questions, you know how to reach us. Obviously, thanks for listening and watching, and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.